Morning, everyone, and Happy New Year to you all. 1 Kings 17, verses 1 to 6. Now Elijah the Tishbite from Tishbe in Gilead said to Ahab, "As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, whom I serve, there will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years, except in at my word." Then the word of the Lord came to Elijah, "Leave here, turn eastward, and hide in the Kereth ravine, east of the Jordan. You will drink from the brook, and I have directed the ravens to supply you with food there." So he did what the Lord had told him. He went to the Kereth ravine, east of the Jordan, and stayed there. The ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning, and bread and meat in the evening, and he drank from the brook. Amen.
In the book of James, we read, Elijah was a man just like us. So keep that in your mind as we work our way through his story over the next few weeks. There are parts of his story where there is no resemblance between him and me at all. There are bits that I can identify with, and bits where I think, no, he is really not like me. But this is the point. We're not going to be studying some superhuman being. Elijah wasn't a scriptural superman. He might have had more courage in one day than I've had in my whole life put together. He might have had a stronger faith than I could possibly imagine, and the perseverance and trust to cope with some really difficult situations. But he was just an ordinary man. And so that makes him a role model for us. That means that we actually can learn from and be challenged by his life. His life doesn't show us what a great person can do for God. It shows us what God can do through an ordinary person who desires and is determined to serve him. Now, most of you will remember that last year we looked at some of the incidents in the life of David, the shepherd boy who became the king of Israel, the greatest and probably the godliest of all the kings of Israel. David's reign was a golden time. It was a time of great prosperity when justice ruled because the king sought God and his ways. Not all the kings of Israel were like David. Elijah lived in much more challenging times, during the reign of a king called Ahab, who was a very different person altogether from King David. Now, Ahab was in one sense a very prosperous king, a very successful king. Under his reign, the nation prospered greatly. He built and fortified many cities, and he expanded the political and commercial interests of the country. It was a wealthy place under King Ahab. But the most important thing about him is that he was not a godly man. The Bible tells us, in fact, that Ahab did more evil in the eyes of the Lord and did more to provoke the Lord to anger than any of the kings before him. And given what some of his predecessors were like, that is really saying something. In chapters 15 to 16, the passage just before the bit that Dorothy read to us, we would have read of a number of kings. Kings who all disregarded God and his laws. And their evil example was readily followed by most of their subjects. But Ahab was the worst of all of them. And in order to form a political alliance, he married a woman who was so evil that her very name is still remembered as a byword for evil. She was Jezebel, the daughter of the king of Sidon. Now, Jezebel worshipped a Canaanite idol called Baal, and we'll hear a whole lot more about that in the coming weeks. And the worship of Baal involved human sacrifice and great sexual immorality. Jezebel had far stronger religious convictions than Ahab did, and she was absolutely determined that she would substitute the worship of Baal for the worship of God throughout the nation of Israel. Ahab was actually quite a weak man, and he went along with her. And so Jezebel established widespread idolatry in Israel. She brought into the kingdom 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of the associated god Asherah. Shrines and temples to these false deities were established throughout the nation, and the altars of God were destroyed, and Jezebel set about killing all the prophets of God. So it was into this situation of spiritual decay, into a nation filled with evil and idolatry and immorality, and the persecution of those who worshipped God, that a man called Elijah appeared. His appearance on the stage of history is really dramatic. He suddenly turned up, confronted King Ahab, and announced, "As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, before whom I stand, there will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years, except at my word." He uttered one sentence to the king, and then he left. The Bible gives us no information about his background, about his family, his occupation, or how God called him. He's simply described as Elijah the Tishbite from Tishbe in Gilead, a wild and rugged area east of the Jordan. But his name Elijah means "the Lord is my God." And he stated to Ahab that he served God. And as the story develops, we'll see that God had indeed sent him to confront the evil and godlessness that was pervading the nation. "Neither dew nor rain, except at my word." He wasn't just declaring a national disaster about to happen. He wasn't just pronouncing God's judgment on an idolatrous and ungodly nation. This was actually a direct challenge to Baal, the idol worshipped by Ahab and Jezebel, because Baal was believed to have control of storms and rain. In Ahab's mind, nothing would be easier than for Baal, the god of storms, to send rain. So if the drought that Elijah prophesied happened, that would be an unequivocal statement of the supremacy of the one true God. That would show everyone that God was God and Baal was not. So having announced such a terrible drought, Elijah then heard a message from God. "Go east and hide in the Kerith ravine," God said. "You will drink from the brook, and I have ordered the ravens to feed you there." And so he did what God had told him. He went and hid, and the ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning, and bread and meat in the evening. and he drank from the brook. And that's our story for today. But before we think about what that might mean for us, let's pause for a moment. So, what can we learn from this first part of the story of Elijah? I want to suggest three things. Sometimes, maybe most of the time, we wonder what God is doing. We know that he's on the throne, we know that he's in charge, but we look around us and we wonder what he's doing. Maybe people who were still faithful followers of God wondered exactly that during the reign of Ahab. But God had been at work. He had been preparing his prophet to challenge the apostasy and idolatry of the times. What is God preparing now, I wonder? Where might he be at work in a way that we do not see? This is not in any way intended to be a political comment, but you will remember that back in the summer, Sajid Javid wrote a letter to the Prime Minister Boris Johnson, resigning from his post as Health Secretary because he could no longer cope with the lack of integrity. He was the first of 61 Conservative MPs to resign during the government crisis, which ended in Boris Johnson's own resignation. Why did he decide to resign then? Because he had just been at the parliamentary prayer breakfast. And in the course of that event, he had come to the conclusion that he could no longer condone what was happening. He was listening to a sermon by the Reverend Les Isaac, the man who started Street Pastors. And in an interview afterwards, Sajid Javid said, "I was listening to him talking about the importance of integrity in public life, and just focusing on that, I made up my mind. I went straight back to my office and drafted the resignation letter and went to see the Prime Minister later in the day." A sermon led to the downfall of a prime minister. A prime minister noted for a lack of integrity, both in his personal life and in his running of the government. I don't really understand all that, but I certainly find it interesting. And I find it interesting too that Sajid Javid is not himself a Christian, but he says, "My own family's heritage is Muslim. I was brought up to believe in God, but I don't practice any religion. My wife is a practicing Christian, and the only religion practiced in my house is Christianity." Somewhere in all of that, I think God was at work. One of the books I read said this: "Elijah was first and foremost a man with a message, driven by the conviction that the God whom he knew and worshipped was not just a God who had lived and worked in the past, but one who was present with the people here and now, and who had a distinctive understanding of the important issues in their national life." I don't know all that God might be doing in our nation that is increasingly turning away from him. I don't know all that he is doing in the world, but sometimes you get a little glimpse, whether you fully understand it or not, that he is not just a God who lived and worked in the past, but a God who understands our national life and our world situations, and who is still at work. The second thing is that God calls ordinary people and does amazing things through them. Remember, Elijah was a man just like us. I don't for a moment imagine that when the Reverend Les Isaac was writing his sermon for the parliamentary prayer breakfast, he had the slightest notion that it would lead to the downfall of the Prime Minister. If we allow God to use us, if we seek to be obedient to his call, I suspect that most of the time we have no idea what happens as a result. Where did Elijah find the strength and courage he needed for such an audacious act as confronting the king? Well, he said it himself as he spoke to Ahab. The NIV says, "As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, whom I serve." But the literal translation is, "The Lord before whom I stand." He found all the resources he needed from his relationship with God. And so will we. Remember that Jesus said, "Abide in me as I abide in you." Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit, because apart from me, you can do nothing. And remember that St. Paul said, "I can do everything through him who gives me strength." A great God can do amazing things through ordinary people, even people as ordinary as us, when we live in him and draw all our resources from him. And the third thing I want to say is that serving God, being obedient to his call, comes in different ways. At this point in his life, Elijah uttered one sentence in a very high-profile place, and then he spent 3 years in hiding. When we look at the whole story of his life, we find that sometimes he had a hugely upfront role, and sometimes he was alone in seclusion. And I wonder which of these was the harder for him. We're all different, and God calls us to serve him in different ways, in ways that suit how he has made us and how he has gifted us. Maybe we have an upfront role. Maybe our service for God is actually in a much lower profile way and much more behind the scenes. And maybe, like Elijah, we serve God in one way at one time and another way at another time. Sometimes people say to me that they don't feel they're doing anything much for God. Sometimes they say that because of the circumstances of their life at the moment, they're not able to do a lot of the stuff that they used to do or that they want to do, and that for them is a source of concern and some disappointment. But I think that in every life as we see in the life of Elijah, in every life there are times and seasons. Times when God calls us to serve him in a particular way, and other times when perhaps because of the circumstances of our life, or maybe because God just says it should be so, we find that our service changes. Maybe you can't be out and about at things in the way that you used to be. So what would God be saying to you now? How would he be calling each of us in this particular season of our life? Elijah had a very prominent role, an extremely prominent role at some times in his life. But at other times, he was alone and quiet in a hidden place. And that may be where you are today. For Elijah, as for us, there were different times and seasons in his life as he sought to trust God and walk with him. So Elijah, a man just like us, an ordinary man, trusting in an extraordinary God and being used to serve him wherever he was called. That should be just like us. Let's sing together, "You Call Me Out